Okay, so the first thing, and this can go out to everybody, is that I want to say thank you to everybody for all of their support and love and help that everybody gave this summer when I was so sick and when I had to have this surgery and whatever, and everybody has been so amazingly wonderful. It's a very weird experience. It's like, I don't think most people have this kind of experience in their life where it's kind of like the real life version of It's a Wonderful Life. You know, where you have this perception of yourself, and then you see all this like outpouring of stuff from other people, and it doesn't match. It doesn't match what your own perception of yourself is, and it feels very surreal and strange, and it's also a little bit hard to take in because it's like your brain keeps, or my brain keeps going in the direction of, this can't be real. This can't be what people really think or feel or whatever. And then it tries to like do these tricks with me, which it's been doing my whole life, but where my brain starts going in the direction of, yeah, well, that's just because they don't know me, and so if they really knew me, they wouldn't do this or whatever. But actually, I think that most of you do know me pretty good, and I mean, at least you know who I am now, and I think I'm kind of somewhat transparent in that part of who I am now. And so I think my brain just hasn't caught up yet with what has transpired and the experience that I've had. But it is like really amazing. I also wanted to share with you, after I got out of the hospital, I made a decision to start seeing a counselor. And before anybody gets any questions in their brain, the reason that I decided that is because I think when I decided to quit smoking in May, I think I opened a huge can of worms that was going in the direction of like dealing with and addressing to anything that is not healthy or that is an obstacle for me or that holds me back. I had no idea that I was going to do it in such a big, dramatic way. I started with the physical things. I quit smoking. Not that I was actually thinking any of this out, because I wasn't. I started to become aware of it as it started to happen. But I quit smoking, and then, you know, as we all know, then I, like, got sick with my diverticulitis, and that went off the charts, and then that ended up leading me in the direction of the surgery. But the surgery, as horrific as it was, it fixed it, and I don't have to worry about that anymore, and I don't have to deal with it anymore. It's gone. So that is something that, you know, cleared something out in a big way. And I mean, I've been dealing with that for years and years and years, and it's gone now. which I'm still kind of a little bit adjusting to, because for so many years I was being so careful, you know, especially with what I eat and things like that, and I don't have to do that anymore, which is kind of awesome, but it's kind of cool. But that was a big, you know, clearing out. I also have had a lot of time to think about the experience that I had, you know, with that surgery and in the hospital. And I don't think that the things that happened there were accidents either. I think that them having to revive me twice wasn't an accident. I think that was part of a clearing out of, not that I've ever, you know, gone in the direction of being suicidal. I never have my whole life. I've never entertained those kinds of thoughts or feelings or anything. But I think it was more of a choice of, do you want to keep going down this road because it's going to be rough, or do you not want to go down this road? And I think the choice was, yeah, I want to go down this road even though it's going to be rough. And so when I got out of the hospital, I also made a decision to start seeing a counselor, because I realized that there are some things in my life that that have to do with trauma, big traumas, that I can't get past by myself. But I know I've done a lot of work in those directions already. I just need a little help to get over the last hurdle with them. And the reason I chose what I chose is because, yes, I could go through the dead guy like you guys do, but I would have to do that by proxy. And that wouldn't really work, because I need to actually be talking to someone to be able to get this all out. This is a big piece of it for me, because the trauma that I have experienced in my life between 2 and 25 or 28, I have never spoken of. I've never shared with anyone. My own children don't know. It has been a big throw that all in the vault. Actually, I, as some of you know, I didn't even remember any of it until about 10 years ago. I had some breakthrough about 10 years ago, and I got flooded with memories. But up until then, I didn't even remember any of it. It was as if I didn't exist before that age. And so, but even in having all the memories now, the memories are separated from the feelings. I either have feelings with no memory, or I have memories with no feelings. They don't go together, which is probably a protective safeguard that my own brain has done over the years, or when things actually happen. But the I have come to a realization with this decision to be seeing this counselor that my experiences weren't usual. For most of my life, even when I remembered everything, I've had this perception that everyone of my age, everyone in my generation, experienced similar things. That their child raising, their childhoods, their you know, adolescence, their young adulthood, was probably all very similar. It was probably all the same because the culture was a certain way when I was a kid. But I have come to find out that that isn't true, that the things that went on in my childhood and as I was growing up are the things that they play in the news once in a while when they find children that have been kidnapped and placed in horrific conditions and are tortured or are, you know, captive. Those are the kinds of things that I experienced on a regular basis through my childhood. I could not talk about those things to another person and have them talk to Elias about it. Besides which, I needed to be able to actually speak those things out to someone and say the words of things that happened. Because it's very different when you think about things and when you actually say it out loud. And one of the reasons that I never shared anything with anybody before, beyond that I didn't remember anything, but when I did remember, I couldn't. The whatever that experience of trauma is, whatever it does inside of you, which I'm not 100% sure what it does, but whatever it does, my own body would react so strongly if I tried to share something that I would shake so bad my teeth would chatter and I wouldn't be able to speak. So I just never did it. I just stopped. I was like, okay, we just won't ever talk about this stuff. And I thought for a good long time in this 10 years that, well, that was then, this is now, and I know the difference, and I'm not crazy, so I guess that, you know, maybe I don't need to address all that stuff. Maybe I can just, like, lock it up and say, okay, whatever. But there have been some things that I can't get past that do influence me, some sort of associations that I've been trying to deal with for years, and I've used everything I could possibly think of that Elias talks about, and it just doesn't work because they're locked in there in a vault, and I can't get past them. And so I figured, all right, this is something that I need somebody else to help me with to get beyond this. I don't figure I'm going to be like dealing with this counselor for very long because to her astonishment, I seem to be moving pretty quickly and getting some real realizations and revelations and really fast. But like I said, I think I've been doing a lot of work for the last 20 years and I just haven't, this is like the last step in that department or whatever. One of the things I shared with Anne the other day, but I recently realized in a way that made me really think about so many other people, so many of you that have talked about not being good enough or not feeling your own worth, or not feeling deserving, or, you know, or feeling like, you know, whatever you do, it's wrong. And I've heard those words from other people for 23 years, and I mean, and I hear it a lot. I personally didn't really like, I wasn't relating to it through my own experience or through my own feelings. But mind you, I have learned how to turn my feelings off from the time I was a very small child. So even though I started turning them back on about 10 years ago, there's a lot of them I'm not real familiar with even yet. And there's a lot of them I don't pay attention to yet, but I'm starting to. I had a kind of a breakthrough, which was fascinating to me, about how strong perception is. It's like crazy wicked strong. I mean, I just had no idea how incredibly strong perception is and how real it is. This was an experience that just like took me over the edge. In fact, so much so I thought I was crazy. I told my counselor, I said, okay, I think I finally snapped. Everything has caught up with me, and now I'm officially crazy because I have snapped. He said, because I had an interaction with my daughter the other day, and I reacted to her for no reason. I said, and not only did I react to her, but I heard myself do it. I heard what I was saying. I heard how I was saying it. And it was like somebody else was talking, not me. It was like I was actually thinking different while I was spewing. I'm like, I've never had that experience before. I'm like, it was like there were two me's happening. There was one that was spewing out this stuff, and then there was the one, like in a lucid dream, that was watching myself do it and going, shut up! It was like, oh my God, stop talking! Just shut up! And I didn't shut up. And then I went into some sort of semi-rational explanation for what I was spewing, which I was still thinking, who is this talking? Just shut your mouth and stop talking. But I kept talking, and I didn't shut up, and it turned into my daughter being very upset and going, why are you doing this? And then me spewing out this ridiculous, lame rationalization. Well, I've been telling you that I'm working on trying to deal with yelling or when people have a tone of voice, and I get really easily triggered by all of that. And then I got met with, well, now I have a tone of voice. I didn't have one before, but now I do, because now I'm pissed and now I'm going to yell at you. And I was like, and I know that, and I don't know why I'm saying these things. I'm like, it was crazy. It was really bizarre. It felt like there was something else in me that was talking, and like I was channeling something, only I was aware of it. It was so bizarre. It was creepy. And I really didn't think that I was crazy. And it ended up being, strangely, we ended up talking it out, and it was fine, and it didn't last very long, which was another bizarre point, because from beginning to end, it was only a half an hour, which was bizarre. I mean, because usually it would be hours and hours and hours, and it wasn't. And the next day, something that my counselor had said the week before popped back into my head about her saying, well, it's no wonder that you, you know, have an issue with people that, like, yell or that have, you know, an angry tone of voice or whatever because of, you know, your parents and what you experienced when you were a kid and da-da-da. And I had said to her at the time, no, this isn't making sense to me, and this is not ringing, it's not resonating with me. And I said, my parents never yelled at me, not once. And I said, neither of them. And I go, they didn't yell at me or my sister. They yelled at each other in another room, but they never yelled at us. And I said, so that isn't, something is missing here. And he said, I don't know why I have this problem when I don't have an association with someone yelling. And in fact, it was the opposite. When something really bad was going to happen, everybody got very quiet and very measured in how they spoke. And that was what was scary, is no yelling and screaming, no craziness, no, you know, going mental. It was all very calculated and quiet, and frightened. And I realized that I had somehow created a perception that I had somehow created my own trigger. You know how Lice talks about triggers that could be anything, you know, a scent, a movement, a color, could be anything that your senses connect to, and then you make, you know, you have a trigger because it connects to a memory. I think what I did was make my own trigger of tone of voice or yelling, that was my signal that the other person is agreeing with me. And what they're agreeing with is that I already believe that everything I'm doing is wrong. And somehow I'm bad, and everything I'm doing is wrong, or it could be better. And that is my signal of validation, and that's why it paralyzes me, because it's like, yep, there it is, it's true, this is it, this is who you are. Which is why it was so hard for me to accept genuinely this tremendous outpouring towards me when I was sick, because why would anybody do that if you're always wrong? If you're bad and you're always wrong and everything you do is wrong, people shouldn't like you. And no matter how much I have, like, listen to that with other people and talk to them and told them over the years, that's not true. It didn't sink in with me, but that's because I didn't even know that it was there. I didn't know that that was the association that I was making. It started to register with me when I realized that's what that feeling is. Whenever I freeze, that's why I'm freezing. Because the feeling is fear because I'm wrong. And I'm bad. And bad things are going to happen because I'm wrong. This is really bad. And bad things that happen are really bad, and that they can be even life-threatening. So it's really bad. I think that that was a huge realization, not only for me, for myself, but it really gave me a new insight into other people, not only in relation to them thinking that they're wrong or that they're bad or they can't do anything right or that they don't deserve things, but also in what they do much more frequently or obviously, in that they can't accept the compliment. That when you say something nice to them or you tell them that you care about them or you tell them that they're good at something, they shy away and they make excuses and they say, oh, I'm not that great. Or it's not that big of a deal. It's not that good. Or I didn't do it myself. Or all kinds of things. They deflect so fast, so automatically. You very rarely hear someone very quickly and automatically say, thank you, I know, wasn't that great? They don't. People don't do that very much. I mean, you might hear them do it rarely, but you don't hear it very often. It's like, you know, and that started to really hit home to me because I know I've been doing it my whole life, you know. I am pretty awesome at some things. I mean, I'm pretty artistic, and I do some pretty nice work, and it's worth noting, and it's worth people seeing it and praising it or whatever, and a lot of work goes into it, and a lot of love and energy goes into what I do. And I, up until now, have been notorious for doing the same thing everybody else does. Yeah, well, it's not that great. I can see the flaws in this one. It's not perfect. Or, thanks, but. And it's like, I started to really realize, well, that's just stupid. I mean, why? What I do is good. And why can't people care about me? And why can't people love me? And that isn't fake. It isn't that they're all delusional. Believe me, I have thought that. And my daughter has reinforced it with me because her experience with me is something completely different. She's been on this earth for 44 years. And her experience with me, the way I am now, has only been for the last maybe 17 or 18 of those 44 years. She has a whole history before that. I have made no secret of it that I was definitely not a stellar parent. And I was a single parent, and I was not a stellar parent by any stretch of the imagination. I didn't use them, but I was emotionally unavailable to them also. I was not a good parent. I didn't have any tools. I don't beat myself up for that because I know I didn't have any examples of being a good parent. I didn't even know what that meant. So how was I going to know how to be a good parent? I didn't. And I don't excuse that in myself, but I also don't beat myself up for it. But now, in the last, I'd say the last 30 years of my life, not just the last 23 years with Elias, but I was already starting to go in different directions before this started with Elias, and I was starting to really pay attention to myself and things that I was doing, and why was I doing this or that, and I mean, because I was, you know, I mean, my counselor says, it's amazing that you're as normal as you are. And I'm like, well, I wasn't for a while. I would say for the first 30, 35 years of my life, I was pretty screwed up. I was a pretty big mess. And yeah, you didn't want to know me then. I was pretty bad. I couldn't help but be a screwed up mess. I mean, because of what I had experienced. I mean, I'm amazed that I'm as normal as I am. But I've worked hard at it. And it's not something that, you know, I suppose you make a choice. You can either turn into a sociopath or you can go in a different direction and try and make yourself better and try and move in a direction in which your life doesn't suck. That's what I chose to do, go in a direction to try and make my life not suck. If I'm going to have the beer, let's try to make it not be so sucky and make it like somewhere happy. And I think I've been getting there in increments, and this was the last step in that. Eventually, I imagine I will be able to be open with other people and share, you know, my experiences, especially if I am interactive with someone who is sharing pretty horrific experiences with me, I can relate, and I can probably, going forward, be able to be more connected and more understanding of other people's experiences from a real perspective, not an intellectual perspective, which is pretty cool. Actually, my counselor said to me, she was worried that we're doing this trauma work, and she was like, this actually does alter things in your brain, like physically. She's like, so I just want to make sure that you're okay with that, because what if it like affects how you do what you do for work? And I was like, well, I don't think it will. But if it does, it probably will just make it better or make it clearer or make another change where the volume of energy gets bigger. And he said, so I'm not real worried about that. And she was still worried about it. And so she was like, but what if that does happen? I said, what if it does happen, then I'll stop talking to you. And he said, and I won't come here anymore, because that's too important to me. He said, and if it goes in that direction, then okay, it can all go in the vault and stay there until I die. And he said, and I just will be as happy as I can be with it all in the vault. And he said, I don't want to do that. I want it to be out of the vault, and I want it to be gone so that I can be a normal person and just be relaxed and drop it all and stop carrying around all this weight and whatever. My indicator that I'm still carrying around weight is memories, that they keep coming up, that randomly I have flashes of experience boxes. Well, they're obviously still there, and I'm still carrying them around if I keep flashing them to myself randomly for no reason. I don't have to get triggered. They just pop up all by themselves. I don't even need a trigger. They're just there. So hopefully this step will put them to rest in a way that they don't keep popping, which I do have some evidence of already, and some of the memories that were really horrific that were very consistent in popping up randomly have stopped. And if I think of them intentionally, I don't, there's no charge with them anymore. So I'm not like experiencing them. But what's fascinating about that is this perception piece that, you know, when I had this like interaction with my daughter, my ears were hearing that she didn't have a tone. A piece of me was actually aware for the first time that she didn't have a tone of voice. She was saying something. She was making a comment to me. She had no tone of voice, nothing. I immediately interpreted it as her having a tone, even though I was aware that I didn't hear one. Now, that's the first time that's ever happened, which is why I thought I was crazy, because I was hearing one thing, but my perception was so strong and so real that what I was hearing wasn't real. What I was hearing wasn't right. What I was perceiving was the real thing, but what I was actually hearing wasn't. Then later, I thought, oh, crap. What if I've been hearing that tone for all these years and she's never actually even had one? That was kind of frightening. I don't think it's that black and white. I think she does have a tone a lot of times. But I think there's probably a lot of times when she doesn't. And I'm translating it that she does anyway. Because it's just all one blur. It's just all what I expect. So because it's what I expect, that's what I hear. My senses reinforce it. And that's huge. To know that your perception is that strong, that it can make something real that isn't actually even happening, it's like, whoa, okay, that's crazy. We are wicked strong. We are some powerful beings. If we can do that, because we make it real, even if it becomes real, even if it didn't start out that way or whatever, it's like, wow, that's crazy. I mean, that to me is as nuts and as strong as making an apple appear in your hand. Because you're making something happen that isn't happening. It's like, and all your senses are telling you it is happening, but it isn't happening. It's like, whoa, okay, well, there's that apple. Guess I actually made one, didn't I? Everybody's been trying to make that apple for 20 years. I bet we all are making it all the time, and we just don't know it, you know? It's like, whoa, how did that happen? It's pretty crazy. But I think that it's really encouraging now now that I'm past thinking that I'm nuts, now I think it's really encouraging, because if I can get past some of this stuff, there's no limit to what people can do. There really isn't. People can do anything. You can all do anything. If I can do it, forget about it.
Forget about it.
Yeah, it's like a cakewalk. So I wanted to share all of that with you guys this time, because I think it was important. And thanks. That, not gonna say it wasn't a big deal. It is a big deal. And thanks.
You deserved it.
Thank you.